This conference is being recorded.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody. I wrote up the agenda not too long ago, so if you haven't had a chance, I put the link in IRC. But basically wanted to do a brief report on RIRI and get the status on Maven and RelsInt, decide on the topic for next week's special topics meeting, and then do our regular review of newly submitted issues, including the one that you all discussed last week, just to get closure on it. So I'll start. Let me paste that to the chat here. Oh, it looks like Steve is having trouble getting into the call, too. He just posted. Oh, I don't think Steve does Skype. Okay, well, I'm going to continue here, and we'll hopefully get Steve's situation figured out alongside. So RIRI was great. We were out there all of last week, and this is basically a training institute that Mark Leggett from UPEI is putting on, and he's done it. This is the second year now. We had a little bit of overlap. I think at least one participant who was there last year came this year, and that was Chris Beer, who is on. I think I saw him get on the IRC there. Chris, are you on the teleconference too, or? Guess not. Yeah, so free conference call doesn't really tell me who's who's dialed in. Chris's comment was that he liked the ramp-up speed this year, that we kind of got the some of the basic Fedora stuff out of the way. And I actually did the first day I did a talk on architecture, the Fedora update as far as where we are with as of 3.2.1, and then did a little hands-on activity the first day just to get people up to speed. So by the end of the first day, we had everybody running with Fedora 3.2.1 on their local laptops. And then later in the week, we got into a few different special topics. So one of the big ones was content modeling. And we did some content modeling exercises on Wednesday, which was really good, kind of hands-on activity where we split people out into groups and had them come up with content modeling, sort of real-world content modeling exercises from their domains. And then Matt also gave a nice active Fedora demonstration. And so part of that hands-on exercise we actually had, at the end of that, we took one of the content modeling scenarios that had sort of trickled up and modeled that in active Fedora, and showed how it showed up, how the instance data that we had come up with had showed up in Fedora, and also showed up in Islandora. And then kind of the culmination of that, for me at least, was the fact that you could, at the end of that day, you could create things in active Fedora and see them in both Fedora itself and Islandora, but you could also make changes in either Active Fedora or Islandora and have them show up in either interface. So it was kind of a neat demonstration. And then toward the end of the week, we got into some discussion around security and where the Fezzle project is at right now, and also search on the final day, and there was some discussion of workflow as well. So all in all, there was quite a lot of material, and I think people got quite a bit out of it. So we're hoping that at least Thorny and I can put our slides together that we did for that conference and put them up on the wiki, maybe as is to start with in the tutorial section, but it seems like the content is kind of geared toward you know, giving it live. So.
And who is there, Chris? It was you and Thorny and Matt.
Yep. So we were us three were the instructors, okay. And then we also had a nice activity. I think it was Thursday afternoon, where the participants, and there were about 20 participants, several of them had things that they wanted to talk about and just describing how they might use Fedora if they aren't already using it, or how they are using it, and just some of the ideas they had as kind of a sanity check. They wanted to bounce off other people in the room, and that part I think people also got quite a bit out of. In fact, we were talking about for next year moving that the participant presentations closer to the beginning of the week, so that that kind of sets the stage for what the instructors focus on, and kind of narrows it down a little bit. So I think that'll be good, and I do think we'll probably have this next year too. It seems like Mark is interested in keeping this as kind of an ongoing thing. We had relatively few participants this year as opposed to last year, because a lot of people have funding issues in this economic climate. But the people who were able to show up, I think, got quite a bit out of it. So. That's my update, and I'm sticking to it. Eddie just wrote me and said he's going to try to come in.
Oh, I've been on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. After I saw Steve's message, I figured whatever it was must have cleared up, so it did.
Okay.
So, Chris, were they able to take video or audio of any of the presentations at RiRi?
So Mark did take some video, and of most of the presentations. So he's got that recorded, and I think they're working on making that available on the RiRi site. We're still kind of figuring out whether he's going to share that with the wider community or restrict it to the RiRi participants that were there in the past and in the future. Obviously, it'd be nice if it was opened up, but on the other hand, it provides a way for people, or an incentive for people to get involved in the RiRi training. So we're still kind of figuring that out. But the video is there, or it was recorded, and as far as who can actually see it in the future, we're not quite sure yet. But let's see. And we also had Good Lobster. Okay, well, that does it for me on the RiRi report. So I was able to follow a bit of the update from last week. I didn't listen to all of it. I just heard the beginning and then fast-forwarded to the section where you guys were talking about the APIM get data stream issue, which we'll discuss later. But there's also the Maven stuff. So is there any any new developments on the Maven side from since last week, Andrew?
Not that I know of. Dan had mentioned that he, you know, might be interested in picking up some of, you know, picking it up to some degree. I'm guessing that Eddie, you haven't had a chance to look at it in the last week.
Well, I did at least get a chance to go look at the old Topaz stuff, and so there's not much there that's useful for us. So, because we already have the dependencies, just I mean, as a grand list, right? It's just right now the issue is just, breaking it out into different modules. So, in that respect, the previous Topaz work doesn't help us, it turns out. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we do have our dependencies broken out as far as like localized dependencies, but all of those need to get converted to as much as possible, pointing out to Maven Central or whatever other Maven repositories handle those particular dependency jars.
I mean, that much of the stuff. I mean, I did a bunch of that stuff too for the. API thing as well, as far as figuring out what could be pointed to Maven Central versus not. But and then as far as having the local dependencies, figuring out how to get that pushed out. But I was thinking more of figuring out how to break out the list into, you know, smaller groups without having to do a bunch of trial and error. So in that respect, the Topaz stuff wasn't really much help.
Yeah, it would be nice. It almost seems like what may end up happening, and it'd be nice if it didn't happen this way, is, you know, a release is going to be on the horizon, and we're going to sort of quickly scramble and tie up these last few things on the Maven, and it won't really have had time to settle necessarily. So it'd be nice if we didn't get in that situation where it was kind of like just done at the last moment before a release.
Yeah.
Just as a general comment.
Yeah. Agreed. So the best reflection of the status is obviously that wiki page that you have set up, Andrew. I haven't checked, but we do still have that branch out, right? But most of the stuff has been rolled into trunk. Is there anything that's in that branch that...
No, that branch is out of date.
Okay. So we might as well do subsequent changes on directly against trunk and blow away the branch.
I mean, that's basically what I would suggest.
Makes sense. I heard from Dan. Dan, are you on the call today? No. Well, I got a message earlier from Dan that he might not be able to make it to the call. So yesterday he told me, though, that he had been running with Maven in his environment and sort of digging into it a bit, so... Seems like we'll get some good info or potential contributions from him on that too. I haven't gone through the exercise of doing it through Eclipse yet, but I've been able to do basic compiles via the command line. Seems like one of the key pieces we talked about before was getting rid of the ant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And seems like the only prereq there that I know of is just that we have nothing that depends on ant. And the only thing we have that depends on ant right now is the automated build, right?
What do you mean by the automated build?
Bamboo.
The scripts in Bamboo?
Yeah.
Yeah, that as well as some of the unit tests. I mean, you know, unit tests are dependent on ANT to the extent that the hard-coded directories in those unit tests are, based on the way ANT expects it. And if we change those hard-coded directories to what Maven expects, then ANT will be missing those tests. So that's those two things.
Okay.
Yeah, so it sounds like that's not so much of a something we're gonna do until after we've made that choice to just drop in.
Perhaps changing the unit tests.
Yeah, I mean just moving over completely to Maven with respect to all those directories.
So like,
once we do that, then pretty much we're saying we're not gonna want to do a full test suite using ANT anymore.
That's right.
So the coverage is good on Maven, right? I mean, we've got the same or
no, right now we don't have. Yeah, we have close to the same, but we don't have all of the same. And there's a spreadsheet there that's linked off of that wiki page that you mentioned that actually has a table showing which tests are covered by which.
Okay. So order wise, we need those dealt with. Is there anything stopping us from, I mean, besides actually having a volunteer, from going ahead and doing those right now? Like, if somebody gets a day of time, they can just bite off on that and do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it'll just break the AMP build. So, that's
to kind of be done in the same check-in. We could break the ANT build and live with the fact that the automated test isn't going to work until the ANT build is fixed, until the ANT build is properly deprecated to where the Bamboo actually depends on Maven. So logically, it seems like those should happen at a close period of time. So do you have like an estimate on how long that would take like a reasonably smart person to do?
I think the test could be done in a day.
Yeah.
Like within a day. Yeah, it's not gonna, it shouldn't take a full day.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do we have anybody who's got a little time to put into this? I can certainly help out on the side of making sure the Bamboo stuff works.
It's probably worth seeing where Dan is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Since he expressed interest last week. It doesn't sound like we have anyone else jumping up and down here.
Yeah. I'm just logging this on the IRC here. Cool. Okay. Well, where we're at with that later, but seems like getting to that milestone is pretty well within reach right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I noticed Steve still haven't issues. I didn't hear that anybody else came in, so I think he's still having some trouble. So we'll kind of use the IRC here a little bit to make sure Steve is able to participate. So on the RailsEnt stuff, everybody was cool with getting that into Trunk, and it looks like Steve went ahead and did it last week. So we've got the issue in Jira is still open right now. We could keep that open until the documentation is done. As far as I know, the only thing that's really outstanding there is the documentation updates that are needed. So, sounds like Steve is okay with closing it. So on the doc updates, maybe we should just create a separate task. Let's see. So Steve says, okay, so he's going to produce a draft for review. Okay. See what Steve thinks of. Creating a separate issue to track the documentation updates.
I haven't checked, but we may need to delete the branch also.
Okay, so I'm going to write all those down. Create issue for RailsEnt doc updates. Close RailsEnt code issue. And then, yeah, let's check on that real quick. So I'll ask Steve to go ahead and remove that branch.
Hi, it's Steve.
Oh, hey, Steve.
Finally.
All right. So, actually, we're just about to end this, but it looks like we are going to have a new issue for tracking the doc updates. And, Steve, you're going to just do a first draft of that.
Yeah, I'm just conscious of the various comments that have been made on the mailing list with regards to the purpose of RailsEnt, so we just want to be a bit careful as to how it's described, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. I'll probably do some bullet points of kind of proposed changes and then people can see what they think.
Okay. also just noticed that the code has been merged into trunk, but the branch is actually still out there. So,
yep, I'll delete that along with the issue being closed.
Cool. All right. So looks like we're good on that.
Cool.
Well, it was nice to get through that and get it into trunk. So I decided to go ahead and try the Apache voting process for this issue. I think there were some good comments on it, but I didn't see it as particularly contentious, but I thought it would be a good chance for us to kind of get into the habit of knowing that we can go ahead and call a vote if we have some different opinions on whether something needs to go in. We need to have a good way that people know of to resolve those conflicts. So Apache's figured out something pretty lightweight, and so I'd like to use that in the future too if we need to. Obviously, if we've got rough consensus, there's no reason to get that formal about it. But I think it's a good exercise for us. So, So next item. So the topic for next week's special topics meeting. So going back to our meeting notes page, we were kind of keeping a list there of possible topics. And here, I'll paste that page. One thing that seems like I'd like to throw out there as a possibility for next week is the plugin architecture, in particular a migration to Spring DM and or straight OSGI. Eddie, did you actually go to the Repository Fringe conference, or is that still upcoming?
No, actually it was too hard to get hotels because there's the actual Edinburgh Fringe going on, so we didn't plan ahead far enough for it. So actually, I've got a quick update just for status on that I can give.
Okay,
so,
sure.
So I've been emailing back and forth with David Flanders and Aaron Zukowski, and we finally settled on a date, so we're considerably later than I think we had all hoped for, but it's going to be the second week of September. So I'm going to be in Birmingham for this Dev8D just sponsored thing, the Dev8D-like thing, for 2 days with Aaron, and then I think that's the end of the first week of September, the second and third, and then the following week, Aaron and I will be in Cambridge, and that'll be sort of kickoff for this. And I talked to Sandy a little bit about this, and so last week, and I think at this point we're looking to do about 3 months of work into doing this starting in September, so that week with Aaron will be sort of the kickoff. I may end up doing, I think I'm going to do some stuff before then, because I'd like to have some more stuff ready before I even meet with Aaron. And David's seeing about even getting this OSGI guy. He wrote some OSGI book, which I can't remember, but anyway, he's based in London. Maybe he'll come out and meet with us for a day while we're in Cambridge as well. But the output of that week is hopefully some sort of a shared service, sort of a proof of concept for a shared service between DSpace and Fedora if they were both running OSGI.
So
I mean, it feels a little cart before the horse in a way, but the reason for that is, I think, from just perspective, that's more of a interesting output. I mean, so we may have to kind of revisit the actual Fedora and DSpace implementations sort of after that, but I think for that week anyway, we're going to just try and work on a service, because that's something that looks looking farther ahead. That's sort of the thing that we want to be able to sort of give to the developer community as sort of this is what we could be doing, right, if we make this move, as opposed to just sitting and doing a bunch of architecture under the hood. And, I mean, from an end-user perspective, then there's nothing to see.
So that's the proof of concept of DSpace and Fedora both using OSGI, or
So I you know, it's like I just I don't know how much we could do, you know, with the actual respective repository platforms in a week, and also then try to tackle doing a shared service. So we may we're still talking about really what we should try to aim for that week. But I mean, at this point, it seems like we're really going to try to show some kind of service that can be shared across the two platforms. Then we may have to do something like an OSGI web app that, you know, does some, say, like some ingest service or something that, that might be useful to both platforms, and then basically shim it into the respective platforms. And then sort of, you know, then you can sort of see how it would flow if you actually did the work on the respective platforms, that, you know, you could just drop in this OSGI, you know, ingest bundler, say, and it would, you know, just be another OSGI bundle in the entire stack. If we can make more headway on actually doing refactoring on the platforms, I think that would be great too. But, you know, I don't know if that's a little too ambitious for just one week of work.
Yeah, that seems pretty ambitious for 1 week. But GIST's main interest is in showing DSpace and Fedora integration or proof of concept that shows if they use the same underlying module framework, then we all win, because, you know, you can start to put in some modules that could be potentially used across the board. But then there's the question for us, which has been outstanding for a long time, is what, how do we sort of modernize Fedora's module architecture? And it seems like we're all pretty much in agreement that OSGI is the way forward. There is a little bit of a question on, I think, whether it's straight OSGI or Spring DM. I'd certainly like to get started on that sooner than September.
Exactly.
I mean, on that piece of it. So, I mean, we can kind of look at this whole thing as, like, you know, there's one aspect of it, which is shifting Fedora itself into the right framework or the right architecture to be OSGF-ified, and the analysis that's necessary beyond that, and, I mean, proof of concepts and things like that. And then there's, like, kind of the output that could be really interesting to JISC. But I'd like, thinking about our special topics meeting next week, I'd like to actually put that forth as something that we go ahead and talk about among the Fedora committers, as, what are our next steps for getting Fedora there? Maybe a little discussion on the difference between Spring DM and straight OSGI.
I think that'd be a good topic myself. I know Bill and I have been putting a lot of time and effort into OSGI the last couple weeks, so it seemed like it's a good time.
Yeah, actually, that would be a good, maybe a sort of mini share-a-thon on that too. I mean, just kind of what we know about it, and just kind of go around and talk about our experiences so far, because I've had a little too. Eddie, I don't know if you've had a chance to do Hello World yet or anything, but
well, yeah, that I did a while ago. I mean, just, but as far as actually putting the effort in wrapping Fedora up as just as a single bundle, I haven't gotten to.
But you have had some thoughts about, like, in particular, like, one approach of basically OSGifying Fedora. So maybe it would be good for that to talk about what that means. I mean, basically having Fedora be itself an OSGI bundle. Because that was, I think, the approach that kind of trickled out of the OSGI conference, right? That, I mean, you got another sort of data point where somebody said, yeah, that's kind of a good first step.
Yeah, well, actually, it was actually a lot of people who said that was a good first step to do. So
yeah.
I think that, yeah, that was the conventional wisdom. I mean, there were people who basically said, I mean, of course, you can do it the other way, by looking at the individual models themselves and making them into bundles. And so certainly you could do it that way. But even the people who said that still recommended going at it the other way, which is using the entire app. And I think I mentioned after I went to that conference, SpringDM certainly seems like a good approach for us too. I mean, like, the qualms I had around it sort of being this sort of a non-standard way of building OSGI apps sort of went away when I heard that, you know, I mean, the Spring Source people are basically responsible for this new blueprint, part of the spec, there's the spec, and then there's the, I forgot what it was called, like the compendium or the...
Yeah, the compendium.
Yeah. So that's actually become, blueprint is, you know, going to be a part of the compendium when OSGI 4.2 is announced in the fall. So that's basically just SpringDM. So I don't have any qualms on that we're doing something that, you know, is going to be sort of foreign or odd for people who then want to be able to use what we do as part of their existing OSGI, you know, app.
Yeah.
Or to make it, or to, you know, put sort of odd hurdles in people's way for people who are already familiar with doing OSGI, but not necessarily with SpringDM.
Well, that would be a good one to continue the discussion on what the trade-offs are there too, because I heard from one of the main Sakai technical people. It wasn't Aaron, but that they with the K2 work decided a while back to go ahead and do straight OSGI and not to use SpringDM because they were concerned about the reusability of things in a straight OSGI context. You know, I kind of mentioned what you had heard about that being sort of blessed a little bit by the main OSGI spec. So I think that, you know, that new information kind of makes it feel a little safer to go ahead and bet the farm on SpringDM.
Not to continue this too far, but yeah, I mean, as far as what I've seen so far, you know, the distinction with SpringDM as far as running it, you know, for someone who's only used OSGI is that it's just going to pull down a few extra jars to be able to throw in like the Spring extender that just starts up the bundle using Spring. But there's not really any other particular hurdles that need to be overcome to deploy SpringDM created bundles in a standard OSGI setup.
And a bundle that is designed to be deployed by Spring, is that same bundle can also be deployed by, you know, just, you know, without Spring, just as a straight OSGI bundle.
I think the only impact is for the developers of where if you're not familiar or interested in using SpringDM and you want to contribute or work on, say, our SpringDM bundles, then you'd want to, and you'd have to shift some mental gears, I guess, to, you know, writing the Spring XML config file and stuff, as opposed to, I guess, you know, manually creating all the manifests and so on and so forth. But I think that's largely perceived as a win, not a drawback. And then, yeah, for the consumers, bundles themselves, it's a non-issue, because they're just standard bundles.
So I'm just writing up maybe the agenda for next week. Obviously, we've got some experience that Bill and Andrew have had on OSGI so far, and it would be good to have a little more detailed sharing of that. And Eddie, I was kind of thinking maybe you could provide like your first stab at what it would mean for Fedora as a whole to be bundled as an OSGI bundle.
Yeah, I mean, I'll try. I mean, you know, if this is our topic for next week, then I'll try and actually spend at least a day or two seeing what the actual steps are in doing it. I mean, if I actually get around to doing the whole entire Fedora as a bundle, that'd be great. But if not, at least I'll have something to report as far as where I've gotten with it. So I'll make that my goal for next week.
Cool.
So I found while I was working this past week, I found a pretty neat set of tools called PAX Construct that help you put together a OSGI bundle.
There's actually a lot of great stuff from the PAX guys.
He's like this
20-year-old university kid, I think, who does most of the entire PAX suite. So he was there in Zurich, and there's a lot of stuff there for PAX Construct. There's this whole unit testing stuff he's got put together.
And logging.
Right. Yeah, the logging, which is very similar in spirit, say, to like using SLF, the logging framework for OSGI. And there's got a pretty good set of tools. Some of it's a little, I don't know how would you say it, maybe a little like leading edge-ish in terms of sort of changing and breaking and so on. But I mean, largely it seems to be super useful, and I think everyone there was using at least some subset of the PAX utilities.
And it does support Spring DM also.
Yeah.
That's neat. I'll have to read more about that. It's cool. Do we have anybody else on the call who's got OSGI and or Spring DM experience? That'd be a no. I think next week, I mean, we'll have a chance for quite a bit more discussion about this and just kind of maybe a little question answering session on different issues we might see or in going through this process. And I want to see what I can find out about K2 in Sakai, and see if there's anything with the work that they've done that we can leverage. The Sakai folks seem quite interested in working together with the Fedora team on thinking about how to best apply OSGI to Fedora and Sakai. I mean, one of the pieces that I mentioned before was just their decision to go with OSGI, straight OSGI versus Spring DM. But they've also kind of hacked down a lot of the weeds. So spend some time finding out where K2 is at and thinking about who we can bug in the Sakai community to kind of help us think about this in a little broader context. So
my take from just talking to people so far is that most of the pain, I think, is just going to be when we start digging into the individual modules and the interfaces and sort of having to do a bunch of refactoring as a result of, you know, really thinking about these modules sort of being standalone and, you know, what interface changes we want to basically live with And then if we start thinking about things like working together with some of these other projects, again, like thinking about our interfaces and, you know, are there some, what can we sort of kind of achieve some common ground on? I mean, so like,
yeah.
I mean, just to do, say, like, you know, some sort of, to support some kind of format for ingest for vSpace and Fedora, I mean, it would be nice then if we can work out some sort of interface that we can actually use in common, because obviously without that, I mean, it doesn't really matter that you create a NoSGI bundle. It doesn't necessarily mean it's not going to be a drop-in service. So,
yeah. So that's a place where, like, I could see Aaron definitely having some good info there, since he's been leading the storage work in the Sakai community, and I think has been thinking about how to apply that to DSpace. So, you know, is there a way that could be used in Fedora, like at a level where, you know, it makes sense to use across the board?
And in that sense, I mean, you know, so even though there's refactoring that would, you know, a fair amount of refactoring potential that would need to happen, we're lucky in the sense that we've been pretty good, I think, about, you know, not sort of putting any of our Java interfaces out, sort of public, expect them to be there, or, you know, stand. So, I mean, we have, I think, some freedom there more than other projects to change things around as we see fit.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, the main one I can think of is the low-level store interface, which, you know, and we can deal with that with some kind of adapter, probably, even, you know, if that we decide, hey, you know, with this move, a real refactoring of that is necessary, I think we could probably work out an adapter that works with old impulse, but we'll see. We're coming up on an hour. I would like to finish this within the next 20 minutes or so, but I think we've got a good plan for the agenda for next week so far. And of course, if anybody has any other OSGI topics to add, you know, we can think about it in the meantime on the list, or just bring them to the meeting next week. But for now, this will be the standing agenda. So moving on to the, I think the last item here is our review of the newly submitted issues. So I wanted to kind of chime in on the FC repo 515. And I did listen to the discussion on that last week too. And I guess my feeling here is that the difference between API-A and API-M has always been vague, and that's not a good thing. One of the nice things about the REST API has been to sort of challenge that thinking and move us in a direction where it's an API, and some of the operations are read and some of the operations are write. So in that same vein, it seems appropriate to think of the get data stream method as being part of sort of the uniform, the read part of the API, which is, you know, consistently, well, for the most part, has been all about just getting information that anybody can access about things. I guess the thing that this brings up for me is maybe a little larger question, which is, should we be in the business of defining sort of subsets of our API which require authentication or don't require authentication? I mean, it seems like the one basic thing we can do is make sure it's possible for people to require authentication across the board, and that it's possible to make the break of authentication at whether it actually changes state or not, or whether whether it's a write style method. So that view seems pretty consistent with treating this as part of APIA for authentication purposes. So what are
there
the implications?
There was this other aspect to it when I was after last week's call. I was thinking about, I was trying to remember, the rationale for why certain things were where. And I mean, part of what I remembered afterwards was, we used to try to make more emphasis on the distinction of the view of the Fedora repository from a consumer versus a creator. So, for instance, we wouldn't have considered Get data stream normally to be part of sort of the consumer facing API. It would have been if anything, it would have been Get data stream dissemination, right?
Right.
So even though both of those are read only operations, we sort of made that kind of philosophical distinction in terms of what was supposed to be part of the view of content in a Fedora repository. So I don't know if that really came out last week when we were sort of talking about why certain things were in APIA versus M, but I don't think it really did. I don't know if that's still something that we want to hold on to. I mean, I do think that there's something in that, that's good in terms of sort of encouraging how you think about what you're exposing,
right,
and how you model your data and your services for your data, but I don't know how far down that's supposed to be reflected.
Yeah.
Well, it seems ideally, there would be, there would be a single API here, API A, API M would merge, and then the defining of which methods require authentication would be just a separate decision that you can you can make the decision on a per method basis. And I don't know, Eddie, if that's something as far as authentication, if that's something that Bezel is considering at all. But it seems, especially looking at from the REST API perspective, it seems like which methods are part of A versus M is somewhat arbitrary.
Yeah. I think that's true. It certainly feels arbitrary to people coming to Fedora for the first time. It's like, why is this in APIM? And I think it's highlighted by the fact that some things have different security restraints put on them. Eddie, I want to go back to your point on basically the encapsulation question of data streams. And I think it is good for people to think of abstracting the sort of data stream access in a way that hides the fact that it's some dynamic representation or not. But I do think that it's possible to do that in a way that doesn't couple it with the authentication decisions. Because it is, although it's related, the term data hiding relates to both security and encapsulation concerns. It does seem like they are fundamentally different concerns. So if there's, ideally we have a way to provide the authentication across whatever access people end up wanting in the end. We know that some of the integrations with Fedora that people have done have completely ignored the fact that the data streams were sort of originally imagined as sort of the private data from an OO perspective. But I'm just thinking about Apache, how Apache deals with authentication as well. And it's interesting how you can essentially set up an authentication filter at the Apache level, which is dependent on the path, the structure of the GET request or the request at large, which the REST API really isn't designed around accommodating that. I mean, it's like, since it merges both of them, doing authentication at a path level in the general case doesn't seem to really pan out that well. But the other technique that's often used is just by HTTP verb. In other words, with an arbitrary web application at the Apache level, what people are used to is that you can make that decision on a verb by verb basis as well. And actually, that's what's done, like with Subversion, often. So, you know, you say, well, if if it's a post, then yeah, we're going to shoot up an authentication request. And I think taking that stance, or taking that sort of common view of authentication instead of kind of inventing our own or going with maybe our previous notions would be kind of a good thing in general. Like, if we could move to a model, I think, where it was done in a more customary way, then we could actually have people deal with authentication concerns as maybe even further out from the repository itself. And, like, I don't know if anybody's doing this. I'm sure some people are, but dealing with authentication at the Apache level, period, and just opening up Fedora, it just seems like doing it on a sort of verb by verb basis, HTTP verb, seems pretty flexible. I think if we get into defining sort of an arbitrary break, we have to think about what that means for our paths, for our REST API URLs, and that becomes pretty difficult. So I don't know.
I was just saying the way it's set up now, the authentication filter for the REST API just has to look for specific paths that it knows are API M specific, and say, oh, I know this one's API M, so make an auth call on this. We have to be very specific about in our filters what we already know is API M, and it'd be nice to be able to get away from that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that trying to rejigger things to fit into certain paths so that people can do path-based sort of filters is going to be a little, it sounds like that's going to be rife for a lot of hand-wringing and trouble. So that doing something by verb is pretty easy. I mean, I think no one would disagree that you should require, or at least, you know, that the first instinct should be to require some kind of auth if you're going to do any kind of put or post, or delete for that matter. But then, of course, I mean, people are concerned about gets as well, right, for a lot of different subsets of gets. So But that's still an easy break to make, at least just between the gets and everything else.
Well, is
it? But the thing is with the gets is that, I mean, I guess when I was bringing up this issue, which, you know, I guess, we can call data hiding or encapsulation. I mean, that's apt. It's part of that, I think, is us setting out or codifying, you know, the sort of best practice for how you're thinking of exposing your data, I guess, right? I mean, we put it out. Traditionally, I think for us, we just let people do whatever the hell they want. I mean, you just configure it so that it works the way you want. But I think time and again, we're seeing that we probably should be stepping up a little more and actually doing something to sort of encourage, or at least, you know, set up the convention, say, for the right way to do things. And in the spirit of Fedora, of course, we allow people to configure it again however the hell they want, but nevertheless, that we should be stepping up to setting up some sort of recommended view of the Fedora world.
So if we sort of in the future took this view that, okay, well, your authentication, I'm just oversimplifying here for the sake of argument. Your authentication is either on or off for the REST API. If it's you additionally have the ability to turn it off for any given verb, for get. Like, if that was the case, then there would be no way to require authentication on just getting the raw data stream content, but not require it when people are making some dissemination call. So I could see where, you know, people, but the difficult thing is the authentication thing is kind of separate from the authorization. So if you do have a repository where it's important that people aren't able to get access to certain things, aren't able to just make get calls, essentially, to any piece of what's in that repository, then is it fair for us to say, well, if you want access to anything in that repository, then you need to go ahead and authenticate and then deal with it on the authorization side. That's less flexible, but that may be something that people are willing to trade the complexity, the reduced complexity for the reduced flexibility.
So one thing that I can see coming up with this too, as far as, you know, sort of doing blanket verb-based authentication, is if we, and I hope we do eventually get to the point where we're actually putting stuff that's currently in Fedora Home as Fedora objects, right? Like our SCFG and even like representing users in the repository and so on, then you're certainly going to be, you know, you're going to want to be more cautious about just allowing blanket gets. I mean, you're not going to want someone to be able to just do a get and get, you know, Fedora SCFG. Right. As more and more of the actual information of the repository is actually in the repository itself, which I think is sort of a right step. I mean, you know, I mean, like what Ben has been doing at Oxford, right, as far as putting everything in the repository, because everything should be in the repository, sort of his view. I kind of like that. Then, you know, just sort of blanket a lot and get is going to be, right away, is going to be something that people are not going to want.
Well, okay, so here's another attack at, or another approach at simplifying is, what if we required everything just out of the box to that every single call required authentication? That would certainly simplify things, wouldn't it?
for the developers?
Well, it would simplify. Well, I mean, there's the complexity cost of code does eventually affect end users, and, you know, in sort of indirect ways. So, I mean, it's not, yeah, it's easier for us to deal with, but there is actually a benefit for users. But I'm just trying to experiment with that to see what does that make difficult for users? I mean, obviously, it means you have to authenticate for every call, but is that,
Could you do that in conjunction with providing an option for kind of a guest account so that you technically are authenticating, but there's kind of zero login as the default, which you could turn on and off or something like that?
So with a guest account, you would... So a guest account could be something where anybody can come in.
They're not forced to authenticate, but in the background, they technically are authenticated as guests. So you can still have wide open access, no barrier to people just kind of clicking on a URL and looking at stuff.
Yeah, of course.
I mean,
distribute our default policies, and then as long as you have like sort of different sets of default policies that are in play when you fire up a repository, then we can that's one way of codifying the things that you shouldn't have access to by default, like say SCFG if that was in the repository.
Yeah, logged in as guest, and then you have to log into something else if you want to look at more protected stuff.
Yeah, as soon as you're requiring a login, you're probably also going to want to be going over SSL to be able to secure those credentials going back and forth. And do we really want essentially a requirement for SSL on everything, on every call?
Yeah, so thinking about the case where you put an Apache in front of Fedora, that's actually fairly difficult right now. The fact is the basic authentication that we use, which was chosen a while ago because of the fact that every browser supports it, makes it pretty unsafe to throw this not over SSL. On the other hand, things have changed, and authentication, digest authentication, has become much more widely supported. So that might address that concern. I know in setting up the Topaz instance on EC2 for the developers, ended up going with digest authentication, and it works fine in browsers. Clients can deal with it fine. It's not the most secure thing in the world, but at least you're not depending on the security of Base64. So I guess to answer your question, Bill, I think if we shifted to a better form of authentication or, a digest authentication, I think that wouldn't require the SSL in many cases. It seems like we could go on this discussion for a while. I think it's something interesting to kind of dig into a little bit deeper later. But we started it with the question that was provoked here in this FC Repo 5.15. And if we took the approach right now and said, as just a first step, yes, this is part of APIA, that would make users' lives easier, right? I mean, they wouldn't have to necessarily authenticate for the time being.
So the one question is, do we continue to have parity between the REST API and the SOAP API?
Yeah.
Does making that choice also change the SOAP API? In which case, might be annoying to those who have to regenerate their clients?
Well, I think another, the REST API has provoked sort of this issue of the weirdness of having APIM and APIA. It seems like that should also be reflected in future versions of the SOAP API, right? Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, I can imagine a SOAP API that is analogous to the REST API in that it does bridge both of those. So we know some kind of change going down the road will be necessary for those, and it would be, you know, a fairly major change API-wise. But if we're thinking about just providing parity, it's certainly possible also to support that. I mean, I can see two options. One is don't provide parity because we're on the road to making these things, turning these things into one API, and it's just, you know, providing parity is kind of fixing something that we know we're going to throw away anyway. The other approach is, yeah, do provide parity, and also allow it, you know, allow old APIM calls to still work and deprecate that method. So I kind of favor not polishing it on the SOAP side, but if other folks like that, I think what we should do is put in there the notion that the SOAP APIs need to be merged in the same way that the REST APIs need to. So we can, you know, point to here's why. Here's why we're not providing parity, because the only reason to provide parity is for sort of the cleanliness of the APIs. So it's really
I mean, the only other thing is you know, if you turn on or if you turn off API A off, and you expect that for some reason to make sure people don't get access to that one method, that'll be true on the SOAP API, but it'll be open on the REST API.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. So, and that would be pretty confusing. So, well, I guess the downside of, I mean, I'll argue against what I just argued for a second ago. So let's say we do change it on the SOAP side too, to be consistent, even though we know the SOAP stuff's going to change significantly in the future. If we do that, just shift it over from APIM to APIA, then we're essentially creating a backwards compatibility issue for people.
Right.
On the other hand, is that really that difficult to deal with? You know, it seems like you use a different stub. You know, in the end, it's just like there's a different endpoint, and that's not that hard to change in code. You know.
Yeah. Well, could you not add it into APIA and leave it in APIM for backwards compatibility? But you know, it's not getting deprecated.
Let's see, then I think that for the reason that Bill was just pointing out might also be confusing when somebody says, okay, well, I want authentication on APIA, or I don't want authentication on API. I don't know. So we could do that, but then I think we're kind of partway confusing people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the other option is kind of like you were saying, is just sort of, you know, allowing, going ahead and making the change on the REST API, and just making a note that, you know, things are going to change on both APIs to pull them together, and just sort of just a stopgap, you know, minor change. And I mean, I can't imagine it's going to be a significant problem for people that, you know, if API A auth is off, then people can also see, you know, data stream properties. I would be more inclined to I mean, if we're going to do, you know, a big change to the APIs anyway, I'd be more inclined to sort of wait for the big overhaul before making people, you know, regenerate their clients and, you know, deal with that. Just so we don't do it to people, you know, two releases in a row.
Right. So you're saying, what's your proposal in a nutshell?
Just leave
SOAP the same.
Leave SOAP the same and move the method on the REST API only.
Okay.
I mean, certainly the other option is do nothing at this point and wait for the big overhaul.
So the only downside I can see to actually putting it in the APIA is if people don't require authentication on it, it does provide access to more information than they used to be able to see. In particular, for reference data streams, and it might for data streams that whose content are piped through Fedora. If they have some back end server that's providing these things from some alternative location, it makes it possible for people to see, oh, where's that really coming from? And it could actually, I don't want to throw the world on its head here, but that technically could open up a security issue where if somebody was dependent on security, essentially if they had, if they were using Fedora as a mediator to provide access to content, and they were using Fedora as a mediator because of this handy XACML stuff, doing all their data streams by reference could have allowed them to sort of hide the fact of, you know, where they actually are. But now people in the know could go in and say, oh, well, that's really over here, so next time I'll get it from there and won't need to
authenticate, potentially.
Yeah,
like I said, yeah, I mean, the other option here is to do nothing. But maybe open another issue that, you know, just talks about the interest in pulling together the APIs and handling concerns with, you know, where do you authenticate external to the repository.
Well, now that we've kind of come full circle on this, I'm actually more inclined to actually look at this in a little larger context, because one of the options we identified in this discussion was what if Fedora across the board required authentication, and I kind of want to play out that discussion a little bit more, because in the end, if we settle on doing that, I mean, even with like a sort of guest account that's built in or whatever, or an anonymous account, it makes this work kind of pointless in the end, because people had to authenticate anyway.
I can definitely see allowing the choice of having it on for everything or having it off, in which case, you know, you're expecting whoever it is, you know, that turns it off to do something above Fedora that handles the authentication. I mean, I imagine for bezel. They could just turn it off and, you know, do all the off in their area. And that sort of allows a bridge between where we are to where we're headed.
I'm not quite sure I understood where they would do it, you know, if they turned it off. But.
Well, I meant sort of, you know, if we can turn it off within just the core repository, and then if Bezel is a service that's sitting just, you know, just slightly on top of the repository. Maybe I'm not understanding Bezel exactly right, but it seems like then you turn it off in the core and Bezel handles those.
Right. Everything's delegated for Bezel if you choose.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess my proposal is that we create a separate issue for sort of the future of Authn simplification, like where we need to identify where we want to be, point FC Repo 515 to this issue and say, we're not going to do what this suggests, but we are going to look at authentication holistically across a merged API A and API M. And that sounds like actually a good sort of special topics meeting itself, because I think we could go on in that discussion pretty deeply if we wanted to. And the other thing I wanted to mention about the special topics meetings is we can certainly have those more frequently than once a month. If we're just covering status in these meetings and we don't have too much to say status-wise, we can, you know, prepare for a maybe more in-depth discussion about a particular topic by just writing our notes in the wiki or, just making sure our status is communicated on things. So this seems like a pretty good topic for a special topics meeting to me. So I want to suggest that maybe we follow next week's meeting with a more in-depth discussion on this one.
Yeah, fine by me.
Okay. So the resolution, people okay with this? Resolution of FC Repo 515 is won't fix, pointing to new issue.
Sure.
All right. Well, that was fun. So we're an hour and a half into it. I don't think we have too much on our newly submitted issues. I just want to go over them really quickly. We have a new one that was submitted, FC Repo 516, submitted by Jason Nugent. And I actually met Jason at RiRi last week. He was having an issue with some Jenna packages that weren't present when he started Fedora. Well, the bizarre thing is I couldn't reproduce this, and it turns out the reason the issue was happening is because he's using IBM's Java Virtual Machine, which has more strict dependency loading. So the bottom line is we could close this and say, okay, well, this is only an issue with IBM's JVM, and we recommend Sun's JVM. But what I'm actually wondering is if we added Jenna, would that break anything? I mean, Eddie, I know you're familiar with this issue that Mulgera used to use Jenna. It appears that it still has a dependency somewhere if you look at the stack trace. But I wasn't able to see exactly where. But if we're able to show that Kawari has a soft dependency on Jenna, then even though it's not absolutely necessary, when you're running with Sun's VM, it seems like it's a good idea to include that jar so that we get a wider compatibility with more VMs. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's a really
strange... Do you want to follow on this at all?
Hello?
Yeah. I haven't talked to Paul. I mean, this is the first time hearing about this one. I don't know if you've met Chris, Paul. Actually, it seems to me like if there's this soft dependency in Mulgera, that's probably not supposed to be there.
Right, yeah. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. It seems like Paul would probably want
to
know.
More than it is that, you know, we need to be bundling the Jenna.jar, it's probably figuring out where, how this is possibly happening. I don't know this package at all. So, I think this is a good one to just ping Paul on and see if there's something he knows. If this just rings a bell for him, but
if there is a soft dependency that's actually necessary for parts of Mulgera to work, then are people okay with actually including that as part of our distribution? I don't know what the normal Maven thing is on that. But
I mean, if it's a dependency, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, then ideally we'd add that as a dependency for the Mulgera package. I think, you know, I mean, just as a wild guess, is if it's not in Mulgera, it's probably something to do with, I mean, just looking at the sectors, right? I mean, it's referencing GRDF, so maybe it's something in GRDF. Which means Paul will roll his eyes and say, the GRDF thing, obviously, you can have the face.
Okay, so the resolution on this is we're going to email Paul and see if there's an intentional soft dependency on Jenna. Chances are there's not, but we'll see. But if there is, then we could include the jar as part of the Fedora distribution.
Yeah, either add Jenna or fix it upstream. If it is,
yeah.
It upstream, yep. Maybe either Mulgera or GRDF.
Okay. All right. Eddie, could you ping Paul on that? Yeah. Okay, so the last one, I actually just submitted this, and this was copied over from the mailing list. So somebody said for a lot of use cases, it's useful to find out whether doing a certain thing would be allowed by the policies. This was Karsten Frederick, basically wanting an endpoint with Fedora that would allow you to check whether something's allowed before actually doing it. I think this has actually come up before, although I wasn't able to find the reference to it on the mailing list. But it seems to me this is a would certainly be a useful thing. Does anybody see any problems with it? Or I mean,
hey, Chris, which issue are we on? Sorry,
this issue here. Sorry, I didn't paste it. FC Repo 517.
Oh, 517.
So basically being able to test requests. I mean, there's a couple ways this could be done. I mean, one is a separate endpoint. The other is providing some header that says, don't actually take this action. Just tell me whether it's possible.
Operation is allowed before it is. So I'm not sure I understand what exactly is wanted. So it's that you don't want. It's not enough to get the HTTP response code back that says you need auth. He wants to be able to actually.
Yeah, it's a way to. Yeah, it's a way to check whether something's possible before actually doing it. So early on in a process another example, the example he puts out is, you know, what if there's a web application sitting on Fedora where somebody has to fill out a bunch of stuff, and it would be nice if before even doing that they were able to sort of submit it with, the application was able to submit it with bogus data as sort of a check to see, is this person even allowed to do this? And then if they are, it would say, yes, they are allowed to do it, and the application would continue, and, you know, the user wouldn't have wasted his time.
So there's one of the work items on the Sezzle project was, so I mean, it may just be an unfortunate sort of coincidence of terms, but was to implement a policy API. This sounds different from what was checked out. The policy API was more like an API for actually working with the policies themselves. So, like, just having an API for updating. And
That might still work if you can actually query the policy. That amounts to much the same thing, though, doesn't it?
Except that you're going to have policies that sort of nest and, you know, have to be sort of calculated. So it's we can treat this as a completely independent item, but in some sense it seems like it's, you might want to just expand the other piece of work to see if it fits there. To have the policy API that doesn't just deal with the actual management of the policies themselves, but also for basically querying what will happen. That doesn't sound like a especially trivial thing. I mean,
well, I don't know.
I kind of like your idea, Chris, about having just a header or in the case of the REST API, a head request.
I mean, in terms of what goes over the wire. I mean, so Fezzel, our authorization in Fedora essentially is a kind of a filter before things get executed, right? So the request is known no matter what request comes in. We already have a way for requests, every request to get to the authorization piece. But if there was just a little extra piece of data there that said, don't actually execute this, just tell me whether it's possible, or tell me whether the policies, in other words, tell the policy, have the policy determination.
Evaluate the policy but not execute, yeah.
Yeah.
You have to go down pretty far before, in some cases, before that really hits, right? Or a fair amount of processing happens before the policy check occurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see how this would be really useful for client apps, because especially where you're trying to figure out what elements maybe you may or may not want to render for a user, you know, you may want to be able to do this too, even before getting to the point of any sort of submission, right? I mean, it's actually that you're going to it's actually what your controller wants to determine what you want to display. So, I don't know what the. Sorry,
so
go on. I'm just going to try and look at the Tesla item of work on that.
Yeah.
So. Maybe it seems like what's being asked for here is reasonable. What we're just concerned about is how the implementation will actually occur. That seems like something that should be looked into more closely, you know, after the issue is open and someone's actually looking into it.
Yeah. So I'm adding I changed the title of this to Way of Testing Requests for Authorization Without Running Them, because that's really what it's asking for, not necessarily a special API. So, I mean, because one way of fulfilling that is certainly to use the existing APIs, say the REST API, for example, and once a request comes in, just check whether that little flag exists on whether to actually run it or to just return true that it's possible. So, Eddie, on the Fezzle stuff, this wasn't in scope for Fezzle, right? Even though an API for policies was in scope, it didn't.
But
have
this
that
particular thing, yeah, didn't cover this exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think logically, this would probably make sense to do after Fezzle, because it would be well after the authorization piece of Fezzle is done. So it doesn't have to be re-implemented later. But
right.
I do think
right.
It's
a nice
it could. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to click open on this one. So.
Seems like it's a good candidate for aspects.
Oh, yeah.
Where you don't incorporate the logic actually into, you know, the implementations, you know, checking for a flag, but basically a proxy just sort of filters it and says, oh yeah, you don't need to go any deeper on this one.
So I just added that as a comment to the thing for future reference. Okay. Well, I think that brings us to the end of the agenda for today. Does anybody have anything you want to finish off with or Should we call it a meeting? Okay.
Meeting.
All right, it's a meeting. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next week.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.